Please clear your desks for the unpop pop quiz, the non-surprise surprise quiz.
Unpopular pop quiz.
What quiz?
This is on the reading assignment that is due today, pages 109 to 126. Again, it is going to be five questions. Make sure your name, class, date, pop quiz, pages 109 to 126 are all on the paper. Question number one, then. Now, listen to these very carefully. By 900 B.C., when Israel was divided into two kingdoms, what two nations were on the rise? By 900 B.C., when Israel was divided into two kingdoms, what other two nations in the world were on the rise at that time? In other words, were becoming strong. So I need two names, two nations here that were becoming strong around the world at the time that Israel was divided into two kingdoms, about 900 B.C. So there'll be two answers then to question one. Okay? This was in your reading assignment, believe it or not. He told you who those nations were. Number two, which is also a two-part question. Part one, what is the total number of kings who reigned in Israel? Now, I'm talking about after the division of the kingdom, okay? So, in the northern kingdom, or Israel, what is the total number of kings who reigned? so I need a figure there. And then part two of this question is the same question applied to the southern kingdom or Judah. What is the total number of kings who reigned in Judah? So you're not going to figure in Saul, David, and Solomon, are you? They were kings over the united monarchy. But after that, when the kingdom divided, how many kings in Israel? How many kings total in Judah? Two answers. I'm going to give you a hint. It's the same figure for both. Maybe that doesn't help you, I don't know. But you'll either be all right or all wrong on it, I guess. Number three. Who was the first king of Israel after the kingdom divided? Not the first king of Judah, but the first king of Israel after the kingdom was divided. Hope there's no names around the boards here anywhere. First king of Israel after the split. Number four. What animal was worshipped at shrines at Dan and Bethel by this king? This king, this first king of Israel after the division of the kingdom, had an animal become worshipped, or an image in any way, of an animal, a certain animal that was worshipped at shrines that were built at Dan and Bethel. What was that animal? Number five, name the wicked wife of the King Ahab. There was a king by the name of Ahab. What was the name of his wife, his wicked wife? That was the last question. Give you a couple minutes to guess some more. Hopefully you're not guessing too much. Hopefully you've read the assignments. Although I do realize that even having read an assignment when it's 10 or 20 pages, sometimes you got to reach back a little bit to remember what you read there. That's where reading it twice can really help. That second time is what nails it down for me when I read some material. And do you want any questions repeated? Okay, I'm repeating question one. By 900 BC, when Israel was divided into two kingdoms, what two nations were on the rise, meaning were becoming powerful nations right at that time? Any others? Yes. Number three. Are there going to be any others that will need to be repeated? If there are, I'll just go ahead and read them. If this is the last one, then okay. Number three. The first king, name the first king of Israel after the split. First king of Israel after the split. Give you just about another minute, and then we're going to switch papers here. Okay, please trade papers. Make sure your name's on your paper before you give it away. Trade them now. Put your name on the paper as corrector, please. Use a different colored ink than the paper that you are correcting. 20 points per question. 20 times 5, 100 points total on this test. If the question is correct, don't put anything on the paper. If it's wrong, put the appropriate minus points in the margin and write in the correct answer. Question 1, by 900 B.C., when Israel was divided into two kingdoms, what two nations were on the rise? The answers are Egypt and Assyria. Egypt and Assyria were coming to the fore at that time of the division of the kingdoms. That's why, in the resultant history of the divided kingdom, the first big section of that history is dominated by Israel and Judah's relationships to Egypt and to Assyria, because they were the powers to be reckoned with at that time. It wasn't till later that Babylonia was to become a power. 605, to be exact, was a real big turning point there, the Battle of Carchemish, which I think was mentioned in this reading assignment. And then even later after that, until the Medo-Persians, or the Persian Empire, would come to the fore. So Egypt and Assyria. Now, since it's a 20-point question, 10 points for each one of those, Egypt and Assyria. So if they got one or the other, they would get 10 points, and it would just be minus 10 instead of minus 20. I see people are looking in the book, checking up on me here, see if I'm right. Number 2, how many total kings? Now remember, this is a two-parter also. The total number of kings in Israel is 20. The total number of kings in Judah, therefore, is also 20. Okay, 20 and 20. Again, 10 points per answer. Total of 20 points. This is sometimes reckoned differently, which I'll be talking about probably either Friday or next week. By that I mean, some don't count Tibni in Israel as recognized as a king, since he was kind of fighting with, who was it? Omri, I think, maybe. And some don't count Athaliah in Judah, since she was a woman and she kind of usurped the throne for several years and then was deposed and executed. And so if you omit those two, it's still the same in both kingdoms, 19 and 19, as recognized kings. But adding Tibni and Athaliah, it becomes 20. Now, in your reading assignment, he stated 20. And so that's why we're going with that figure, and that will be the answer. Number 3, who was the first king of Israel after the split? Jeroboam was the first king of Israel. I will accept. Can I have your attention, please? I will accept a misspelled word if you can dogmatically be sure that this is the word that they mean and not another word like this. That is wrong, because he was the first king of Judah after the split. Remember, Solomon died, and his son Rehoboam came to the throne of Judah. But Jeroboam was the king of Israel after the split. Okay.
The number one after, like it was Jeroboam 1 and Jeroboam 2, but the one after, the misspelled the J for an R.
No, not an R. That would be Rehoboam. It's good that you put the first, because Jeroboam should be distinguished from the later Jeroboam, but there was only one Rehoboam. Okay. Number 4. What animal was worshipped at shrines at Dan and Bethel by this king? The calf. He made golden calves at Dan and at Bethel, and these shrines were used as places of worship. So the calf is the answer there. Yes.
Cows.
I suppose we have bulls and Holsteins and Jersey and Guernsey and heifers. And okay. I will accept cows. Are there any other variables? Black Anguses. Okay. Number 5. Name the wicked wife of King Ahab, Jezebel.
Who can forget that name? In fact...
Yeah, I can, huh? You can. Because she was so wicked, her very name has become a term for some for a woman of ill repute or a wicked woman. Oh, that Jezebel. You know, when you talk about someone who's a wicked, you even use her name. That's her name has come to have that connotation to it because of her wickedness. All right. Please total up the minus points, subtract them from 100, and then put it as a percentage grade at the top, circle it, turn it back to the owner. The owner, please check the math to make sure it's correct, and then pass the papers forward, please. Attila. Attila the Hun. Athaliah. That was the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, who married King Jehoram of Judah. If you're not doing these reading assignments, I'll have to warn you, you're hurting your grade, because these do count. I think, maybe, did I throw one out? I might have thrown one out way back at the beginning, the first one maybe. But other than that, these are counting. These are going on your grade, on your record, and they're going to be totaled up and figured into your final grade. So please, and not just for the sake of your final grade, of course, either, but for the sake of the knowledge that you're gaining, this is a wonderful supplement to what I'm bringing in the lectures, and with the two things, reading and then listening to the lecture and then studying your notes for tests and so forth, with these different things, it should help you to really get a fairly solid overview and understanding of this Old Testament history. So you're just hurting yourself, hurting your grade, hurting your knowledge and so forth. And when you know that I'm going to be giving these pop quizzes on it, you should be prepared. And I feel a week that I've been giving, in most cases, is plenty of time to read 20 pages. Even if you're a slow reader, you could be able to read 20 pages in, you know, a very short period of time. And you got a week to do it. Certainly, even with a busy schedule, you can find some block of time where you can sit down for a half hour, an hour, and read. So please continue to do these. And read them good. Read them through a second time, maybe. Even take notes on it if you have to get this in your mind. Now, since we're ahead in the book from where we are in the lecture now, the book went all the way through the divided kingdom, all the way to... all the way to the captivity, didn't they? The captivity of Israel and then the captivity of Judah. So we're all the way down to the captivity. So we're quite a bit ahead now of where we are in our lecture. So there won't be any reading assignment then for this coming week. Yes?
Yeah, on page 118, the author says, in fact, we're talking about
Abijam.
Abijam. Continued the warlike policies. Also, as his father then had gone into idolatry. In fact, conditions were so bad that God would have brought an end to Abijam's life if it had not been for his covenant with David. How does he? Is that scriptural, or does he just think that God would have brought an end to his life?
I don't know whether he's just speculating there, or whether there's a statement. You'd really have to read the two passages that he gives up there, 1 Kings 15, 1-8, 2 Chronicles 13, and read through there and see if there's any statement there about, you know, the wrath of the Lord would have come except for such and such, because I really don't know if that is. But I do know that the principle is true that because of David and the covenant that he made with him, there was a promise that he would have a light always in Jerusalem. In fact, that was the reason that when the kingdom was taken from Solomon after his death, that he did still have Rehoboam, his son, ruling on the throne in Judah because of that promise. He even said right in that 1 Kings 11 passage that we read, but because of my servant David's sake, I will give you one kingdom in the south. And all the descendants, all the rest of the kings that rule in Judah are all direct lineal descendants of David through Solomon. David, Solomon, Rehoboam, and then you go all the way down to Zedekiah. They're all sons of David or descendants of David there. And they all, so there's just one dynasty involved. It's interesting that God would say something like that and then work on that basis. It tells me that a covenant means something when God makes it. When God makes an agreement, when God makes a promise, when He states something, it means something to God, and He'll stand by His word. It tells me that prayer is important too. If you will pray for your unsaved friends and loved ones, that God will hear those prayers. Now, He cannot force somebody against their own free will, we know. But He will be faithful to work on them. Somehow, as those vials are filling up in heaven as a result of your prayers, God is doing something. Something is going on. And He's made covenant with us to keep us always. Jesus said, "You are in My hand, and no man can pluck you out of My hand." And so that means something. He's made a promise. And so, barring total apostasy and rejection of God on our part, He's going to keep us. We're going to be kept in His hand. He's going to, even through thick and through thin, through the trials, through the valleys, as well as the mountains and the victories, God will stand by and He'll keep us. How many here saw the Dobson films, the James Dobson films that were currently? Okay, about a third or half. Remember what he said about his parents and their parents and their parents all being Christians, and they were all, and their ministers all through his family. And because of certain commitments and prayers and decisions on the part of his great-grandparents, he was raised up in a godly home and atmosphere and resulted in certain benefits to his life. And so that's a wonderful heritage to know that we, those of us that are Christian parents, can pass that on to our children. Train a child up in the way he shall go, and when he's old he will not depart from it. We can instill with them the godly heart and principles that they will follow when they grow up. Okay, now, we are looking at 1 Kings, and as you know, 1 Kings 1 through 11 is the reign of Solomon. 1 Kings 12 through 22 is the divided kingdom. And we have come to chapter 12, the division of the kingdom, and I'm making a few general remarks along that line before we go further. So the split then is recorded in 1 Kings 12, 1 through 20. And I told you that it was Rehoboam listening to the young men, young counselors, instead of the elder ones, and he put even heavier taxation on the people than his father Solomon had, and as a result there was a split in the kingdom. So from now on in the scriptures, and in this class, we're talking about a divided kingdom. Two separate kingdoms with different kings reigning simultaneously, one in the north and one in the south. The nation of Israel is divided into two halves, one in the north and one in the south. The north is called Israel, or sometimes we will refer to it as the 10 tribes, because that's how many tribes were in that kingdom. Reuben, Simeon, Issachar, Zebulun, Ephraim, Manasseh, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher were all in the northern kingdom. The southern kingdom we call Judah, and that consisted of 3 tribes. Judah, Benjamin, and then later the Levites, who got tired of the apostasy and the idolatry and the golden calf worship that they saw as they were living up in the northern kingdom, left en masse and came down to the south and decided to live there. So Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. Some scriptures with the southern kingdom consisting of 3 tribes. 2 Chronicles 11, verses 1, 3, 10, 12, and 23. 2 Chronicles 14, verse 8. Chapter 15, verses 2, 8, and 9. And then with Levi, one scripture, 1 Kings 12, 23. Now, it is very important that we keep these names straight. Unfortunately, even certain Bible scholars and commentators don't keep the terms straight and don't realize who God is talking about when He uses these various terms and descriptions. These nations have specific names in Scripture. First, Israel, the northern kingdom is called Israel, most probably because they had the majority of the tribes. 10 in the north versus 3 in the south. And by the way, you say 10 and 3 is 13. I thought there were 12 sons of Jacob. There were. But if you'll recall, Joseph received the double portion of the inheritance of Jacob instead of Reuben, the firstborn, who would have got it except for the sin with Bilhah. And so Joseph, having a double portion in the land, his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, were each given a full portion. So that's where you get 13. Ephraim and Manasseh as the tribe of Joseph split, Ephraim, Manasseh, each getting full portions in the land. So that's why it adds up to 13 when you count it that way. Now, but another way of counting it is 12 again, since Levi had nothing in the land. They were the priests. Their portion was the Lord. And other than the Levitical cities scattered throughout the land, they had to have places to live, of course. They did not have plots. They didn't have farms. They didn't have ranches like the others did. And so when leaving them out from the inheritance viewpoint, you still come to 12 again. Now, Israel then, because the majority of the population was there, the majority of the tribes was there. So that's probably why he called that Israel. But sometimes this northern kingdom is called Ephraim in the scriptures. Why? Well, because the first king to rule over that nation was from the tribe of Ephraim, Jeroboam the first. I think he's Jeroboam the son of Nebat, isn't he? Or is that Jeroboam the second? Can't remember now. That's Jeroboam the second? Okay, that could be. Anyway, we distinguish him by calling him Jeroboam the first. Even though the scripture doesn't, it's obviously all right to do that, just to keep these two names straight in our mind. Just like I forgot if he was the son of Nebat or not. That's the reason why you call one Jeroboam one and Jeroboam two. Now, Jeroboam the first then was from Ephraim, and so it's reasonable that God could sometimes call that whole kingdom Ephraim. Not only that, Ephraim was the dominant and largest of those 10 tribes. All 10 tribes didn't have the same political ambitions. Some of the tribes were smaller, like Zebulun and Issachar, and they were content just to work the land and not try to get involved in the politics and wars and so forth. But other tribes were more, you might say, politically minded, more powerful. The capital, of course, of Israel was located in the tribe of Ephraim. So the capital was there. It was the more dominant tribe, the leader tribe. It was the largest tribe. And so, therefore, sometimes the whole northern kingdom is called Ephraim, even though, of course, we know it contained 9 other tribes. Also, sometimes God simply refers to the northern kingdom as Samaria. And that is because that was the capital city of the northern kingdom. The capital city, just like Jerusalem was the capital of the southern kingdom, Samaria, a city located in Ephraim, was the capital city there. Now, the southern kingdom, of course, is called Judah. Why? Well, because the first king, and really all the following kings, were from the tribe of Judah, since they were all descendants of David, who was of the tribe of Judah. Also because Judah was the largest of those 3 tribes. Benjamin was a small tribe, and the Levites had no land. And so Judah would be the one that would be used. Also, sometimes God calls it Jerusalem, but not always limiting it just to the city, but using the city to stand for all of the kingdom. Jerusalem, of course, being the capital city located in Judah. Now, sometimes they are called the Jews. But when they're called the Jews, that is a post-exilic name. In other words, after they went into 70 years of captivity and came back, they were sometimes called the Jews, and that was how the Babylonians pronounced Judah. They had a different way, because of their Babylonian accent, that they pronounced Judah, and it came out close to Jews. And so this is why they were called that. It was this kind of a twisting of that, mispronouncing of that name. If you've ever studied certain words in English, you'll see that a lot of words have come down to us as mispronunciations of words from the French or words from the Latin or words from the Greek that were mispronounced, and they just came to be spelled and pronounced that way in English. It happens quite a bit in language. Okay, so there were, depending on how you count them, 19 or 20 kings in Israel. Every one, let's say 20 when we're going to add Tibni, every one of those 20 kings were evil. There was not one good king in the nation of Israel. There were 20 kings in Judah. Some were good, some were evil. And so you had a kind of a mixed bag in the southern kingdom. The nation split. Most of the modern day conservative scholars of Bible chronology date the split of the kingdom at about 931 B.C. And so that's the date that we will go with. The kingdom divided around 931 B.C. Now, after the nation split, and I'm just giving some general background here for us, so before we get into Kings and start looking at the details. After the nation split, Israel, the northern kingdom, unfortunately disobeyed the Lord. They fell into gross sin. And it started with their very first king, Jeroboam the First. Jeroboam, as we said, set up those golden calves to worship. Although, supposedly, it was just another way of worshiping the Lord. But you know that it wasn't very long where it came to be worshipped, the calves, and the Lord wasn't even involved in it, except maybe in name. So this was idolatry, really, just as much as the Babylonians worshipping the sun and the moon and the stars, the Egyptians worshipping animals, the Nile and crocodiles and so forth. It was really every bit as heathenish as that. In fact, it may have even had its origin in the worship of calves and cows and so forth in Egypt. For we see that when Israel came out of Egypt and were sinning at Sinai, when the law was given, it was the golden calf that they made that they were worshiping. And they were just fresh out of Egypt. Now, Jeroboam the First set the pattern for how Israel was going to go. You know, it's very important to start off on the right foot. If you start a Bible study off, it's important to start that Bible study off on the right foot. Don't start it off allowing people to argue against you and rail and act any old way they want and so forth. If you start it off wrong, it's going to be very hard to correct it later because it's going to be set. You're going to have a pattern set. No matter what you talk about, whether it's a church, whether it's your family, you get married, your marriage, those first few weeks or months of your marriage can set the tone for what the rest of your marriage is going to be like. How much love and respect you treat your mate with. How firm your commitment are to always come to services, not sleep in because you stayed out late Saturday night and you start missing a bunch of services. There's these various little decisions that you make, and big decisions in your marriage. The way you started out is going to set the pattern for the way it's going to be later. Now, you can change it. You can come to grips with yourself and pray, and the Lord can help you. You can turn it around, but it's hard. And it's much easier to start off on the right foot in your Christian walk, anything you want to talk about. Well, Israel started off on the wrong foot, even though, as I said last week, this Jeroboam had been given a wonderful promise by God that if he would walk with God, if this kingdom would walk with God, I say the northern kingdom, that God would establish it and God would be with it. So it's not like God wrote him off from the very beginning and said, look, you rebelled against the sons of David, and you're rebelling against Jerusalem and the tabernacle, the temple and the priesthood and the law, so you're written off at the beginning. God didn't say that. He said, I'll be with you. But they chose not to. And so the first king, what's it going to be like, this new divided kingdom? He comes in with idolatry, right? Very soon after he started his administration. And that got them right off on the wrong track, and they followed that basic track, not ever veering very far off of it. And when they veered off of it, it was only to go deeper in sin. They never, as I say, came into righteousness as a whole nation. And remember this, not that there were not some righteous people in that nation. There were. Elisha and Elijah ministered to the northern kingdom. God told Elijah at one time there were 7,000 still in Israel, northern kingdom, that had not yet bowed the knee to Baal. So God has always had a remnant. He's always had his righteous few. But still, as a whole, you can say that that kingdom was more wicked than usually Judah, the southern kingdom, was. This kingdom of Israel lasted for 210 years. And there were 9 dynasties that ruled that nation. A dynasty is simply a family. And so if I rule on the throne of Israel, and then I die and my son follows me on the throne, and he rules and dies and his son follows him, that's all one dynasty. Even though it's 3 kings, it's still one family, it's one dynasty. And then after my grandson dies, if a man of another family comes in and takes the throne, maybe the general comes in, assassinates him, and he puts himself on the throne, now you're into the second dynasty, the second family. So there were 9 families or dynasties or lines that ruled in Israel. Israel, of course, eventually met their end in the Assyrian captivity, which we date around 722 B.C., Assyria, we've talked about this before, swept in Here's Assyria, swept in from the north, came down into Israel, took many of them away back into Assyria, into the cities of the Medes, left the poor of the land. There were Israelites that they did leave, allow to remain in the land. And then Assyria brought in peoples from other nations that they had already conquered and brought them into the land of Israel. And they eventually mixed and intermarried with the Israelites in the land, and they which is the purple and yellow section here. This is Israel. Judah is this pink section down here. And the intermarried people eventually became known as the Samaritans because they were from the area of Samaria. That's where they came from. 2 Kings 18, verses 11 and 12. What happened to the rest of them? They were scattered. Older Bible scholars back a couple hundred years ago used to believe that there were still people. The Israelites had never left those original places where they had been scattered in the cities of the Medes and Assyria and so forth, and that you could even go there today and still see these peoples living there, and that would be the Israelites, the lost tribes, quote unquote, of Israel, which is not true, of course. If you went to those places, you would find Kurds and Turks and Armenians and others who were there, but they were not Israelites. Israelites didn't stay right in those places. Eventually they went and they were just disseminated. And they scattered. They came up through Asia Minor, Europe, maybe some over into Asia, we don't know, up eventually into Russia and so forth. They were scattered throughout the nation, throughout the earth, I should say, and they lost their national identity. It was just like they were dissolved and they were no longer as a nation. God will bring them back in the millennium, and they will serve God together as a nation, all of the tribes. So there's Israel's history in a nutshell. Judah, because, and I think Mr. Voss pointed this out in the book, because Judah did have more righteousness and some righteous kings, God did allow that nation to exist a little bit longer. It lasted about 326 years, as opposed to Israel's 210 years. But after 326 years, because they had fallen into sin as well, they were taken captive by Babylonia. In 605 BC, they went captive for 70 years and came back in 536 to the land. So they were scattered, and many of them didn't come back, but a remnant did come back, and they were the ones that rebuilt the land and the temple and so forth. 2 Kings chapters 24 and 25 were that. Now this nation, which began with Rehoboam, son of Solomon, all of the kings that ruled on a throne from Rehoboam to Zedekiah, the last king, were the same family. And so it was one dynasty. One dynasty reigned. They were all lineal descendants of David. Judah, as I say, returned to Palestine after 70 years in captivity in Babylonia. According to Jeremiah 25, verses 11 and 12, and Ezra 1, verses 1 through 5. Now, it is during this period of what we call the divided kingdom that the books of the prophets fit in. And we won't be spending much, if any, time looking at the books of the prophets, since we're looking at a survey of the history of the Old Testament. And the prophets are giving prophecies that were given during certain periods of history, but their books aren't filled with lots of history like the historical books are. So we won't be talking much about the prophets, but obviously, this is where they fit in. The major prophets, which is Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel, with Lamentations, which was written by Jeremiah, and the minor prophets, Hosea through Malachi. And they fit in during these periods of the kings of Israel and Judah. They ministered at these times. Basically, you could say that the prophets were raised up by God to warn these two nations that unless they repented of their sins, that they would be taken captive. Now that is a very, very condensed and simplified, perhaps even oversimplified view of their prophetic ministry, because obviously they did prophesy of the Messiah to come, first coming, second coming, the Gentiles coming into the covenant, promises of Israel being restored in the end of time in the millennium and so forth. But still, I do feel that it is safe to say that a basic reason for the prophet's existence was as a mouthpiece of God to the people so they could hear what God felt about how they were living right at that time. Because they could look back at the law, The law would tell them that. In fact, the prophet's message wedded perfectly with what they had already knew in the law. But it's so easy to just for them to brush aside the law, even as it's easy for Christians to brush aside the Bible today and say, well, written 2,000 years ago and not really applicable to us today that much. And so God said, well, wait a minute. I'm going to raise up men that are going to give you word that is right straight from the throne. Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, such and such and such and such. A little bit harder for them to brush that away because they knew that these men were men of God, raised up, anointed by the Holy Spirit, born along, uttering these things under divine inspiration, seeing these prophecies fulfilled. They would see other things the prophets would do, and particularly under some of the prophets, Elijah and Elisha, miracles would follow their ministries as well as a further confirmation that they had been indeed raised up by God. So today, perhaps, as God again reinstates the fivefold ministry of Ephesians 4 to the church, there's going to be a more personal, in a sense, word to the church and to the world so that they know that the words in this book are applicable and apropos to today, and God will be saying basically the same things again through His body, through prophets that God will raise up and so forth. Now, although there are some differences between what the New Testament office of a prophet is and the Old Testament office of a prophet, because we're not living in a monarchy, so forth, and theocracy like they were in Israel. So, and basically, you can say that the two nations, Israel and Judah, did not hearken to the words of the prophets, and thus they were both taken captive. They didn't have to be, but they were. Now, I say basically they didn't, because there were times of many revivals in Israel and Judah, not so much in Israel, although there were some times when they would put away some of the sin, and some of the Baal worshippers and so forth would be put out of the land as a result of ministries of prophets and whatnot, but still never really totally got rid of sin. Judah, a little bit more response. There were some major revivals in Judah, as we shall see under the reigns of Jehoshaphat, Asa, Hezekiah, Josiah, and so forth. But still, even Judah ended up going back to the pits of idolatry, and as a result, they both went captive. Israel to Assyria, 722 B.C., Judah to Babylonia, 605 B.C. Then after 70 years, as I say, Judah returns to the land of Palestine. Now, this, Judah returning to the land, is where Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther fit in, those three books. These books deal with the return of the Jews to Palestine. Also, three of the minor prophets fit in at this post-exile time, namely Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. And these were prophets that encouraged the people to rebuild the temple and to go on with the Lord. Okay, 1 Kings then, 12 through 22, covering the first 80 years of this divided kingdom. And I'll put on the board the kings that are covered in 1 Kings. Now, as I said a while back, you've really got to pay close attention and keep your thinking caps on at all times when you start dealing with these 40 kings. 40 kings in two kingdoms. That's a lot of people, names to deal with. I will not expect you, for example, on a test, to give back to me all the names in order of the 20 kings in each kingdom. I would not expect that of you. That's too much to ask. But I'll just throw out that I will expect you to know the major kings that we talk about, the main things that happened. You know, the main kings, the Hezekiahs and the Josiahs and the major revivals and things. But I'm not going to ask you a bunch of questions on dates. When did he reign? When did he reign? Don't worry about that. Get it in your notes when I give it and read it and so forth. But as far as your tests, I would ask you more main points. The more time I spend on a thing, generally, the more likely it is that it's going to be given on a test. So I'm not going to ask you to memorize all the names of these. You do have to for historical books. At least they used to have to do that, and I think they still do. In that class, it makes sense that you would, because you're in that class 3 or 4 hours a week, and the whole class is just on the historical books, so you would need to know that. But for this class, you will not. Okay, kings of Judah then, first. Covered in 1 Kings 12 through 22, we start off, of course, with Rehoboam, 1 first king of Judah, followed by Abijah, who is sometimes called Abijam. Now, here is an additional reason that you have to be very careful and very attentive to these names, because there are variant spellings. Sometimes he'll be called this, sometimes in the same chapter of the same book, he'll be called that. And you've got to be careful to follow and find out all the alternate names and alternate spellings for these kings and put them together so that you don't get mixed up and think that Abijam is a different king than Abijah. That's the same man, okay? Just variant spelling. Sometimes the fault is of the King James Version for not spelling a name in the Hebrew consistently. Sometimes it's because the Hebrew has different spellings for the same name. Okay. Abijah followed by Asa. Asa followed by Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat followed by Jehoram. And that's as far as 1 Kings takes us. And of course, when we get to 2 Kings, we'll just pick up right here and continue through the rest of the kings of Judah. Now for the kings of Israel. We start with the first king, Jeroboam. Did anybody find out what his father's name was? Was it Nebat? It was Nebat. Okay, I don't remember what the second Jeroboam's father is then. Jeroboam the first is called Jeroboam the son of Nebat. But we can call him Jeroboam the first just to distinguish him from a later king of the same name. Jeroboam followed by Nadab, followed by Baasha. You got two A's there. And you kind of break them up when you pronounce them. Baasha. Not Baasha, but Baasha. Baasha followed by Elah, followed by Zimri, followed by Omri, followed by Ahab, followed by Ahaziah. And that's as far as 1 Kings goes with the kings of Israel. 2 Kings covers the remainder of both of those kingdoms up to and including their respective captivities. And so with kings of Judah, in 2 Kings, you have Ahaziah, Athaliah, Joash, Amaziah, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, Manasseh, Ammon, Josiah, Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiakin, notice one is spelled K-I-M, Kim, and one is C-H-I-N like chin, but it's not pronounced Jehoiachin. The C-H becomes a K sound, Jehoiakin. And then the last king of Judah, Zedekiah. Then we have the rest of the kings of Israel recorded. Brief statements about their reigns in 2 Kings, picking up with Jehoram. Followed by Jehu, Jehoahaz, followed by Jehoash,
followed by Jeroboam, who now we will call Jeroboam the second here, different king, followed by Zechariah, then Shalom, then Menahem, Pekahiah, Pekah, and last, Hoshea, last king of Israel. So there's the complete list of, do I have Athaliah on this list? And do I have Tibni? Okay, Tibni, I believe, would come after Omri.
After Zimri.
Zimri, that's right. Zimri and Tibni. So theirs makes 20 for Israel. And then with Athaliah, after Ahaziah, there's 20 for Judah. Thank you. Now, as I say, following the split, Jeroboam the first then introduced idolatry. And that idolatry that was introduced by Jeroboam was to become characteristic of Israel's history. Now remember that the temple and that the Levites were in Jerusalem, although there were some Levites who were throughout the whole land. And the reason for Levites being throughout the whole nation was that God, in the law, had instituted 48 cities throughout the land that the Levites were going to be allowed to live in, along with what other Israelites would be in those cities. And these are called the 48 Levitical cities. So there were Levites living throughout the land. But when Jeroboam set up those golden calves in Bethel and Dan, which is recorded in 1 Kings 12, 26 through 33, the Levites were offended. And they were too godly to put up with that kind of nonsense. And thus they fled to Judah, along with, by the way, interestingly enough, remnants or parts of the other tribes as well. So there might have been some people from Dan or some people from Ephraim who wouldn't put up with that either. And they said, we're going to leave our land and go back and live with Judah, because they're walking with God down there. So Levites and remnants of all the 12 tribes fled to Judah at that time, according to 2 Chronicles 11, verses 13 through 17. Now, these kings cover periods in history which can be divided according to what were the major movements going on at that time. For example, I'm missing something here. The first three kings here of Judah, Rehoboam, Abijah, and Asa, as well as the first three, as well as the first 7 kings of Israel, down to Ahab, can be called, including Tibni, can be called the early kings of the divided monarchy. And so we can take them as a section. The first three kings of Judah and the first 7 kings of Israel, early kings of the divided monarchy. Then, the three kings, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, and coming over here to this one too, Ahaziah, as well as
the kings Ahab, Ahaziah, and Jehoram of Israel can be called the period of alliance between Israel and Judah, because the two nations made an alliance at that time. Now, they were still two separate nations, and so you cannot say it was a united nation. They were still two, but they were two nations that were allied now, military alliance. We'll talk about that when we get to that. And then all the rest of them, from Athaliah down to Zedekiah in Judah, and from Jehu down to Hoshea in Israel, you can call the decline and fall of the kingdoms. Okay? By the way, notice that some of them have the same name, though they're in different—they're different men in different kingdoms. For example, let's see. Yeah, the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth king of Judah is named Jehoram, and there's a king over here in Israel, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10th king of Israel is also named Jehoram. So be aware of that fact. Also, notice that there is a Jehoahaz down here in Judah, right here, and there's a Jehoahaz in Israel as well. Also, to further complicate matters, there is this king right here, Joash, in Judah, is also called Jehoash on occasion, which if you don't be careful, you will confuse with this king, Jehoash. Okay? So Joash is Jehoash, sometimes called. Also, I think there's... aren't there two Amaziahs as well?
Ahaziah.
Ahaziah? Okay, here's an Ahaziah in Judah. And over there is an Ahaziah in Israel. So there's two Ahaziahs, two Jehorams, two Jehoashes, two Jehoahazes. So there's a total of eight kings with the same name. Also, let me see. This man here, Shalom, this king, let's see, down here, Jehoahaz in Judah, in one place in the Bible, I believe it's Jeremiah chapter 22, he's called Shalom in that place, but he is not that man. So you got to keep these things straight. Otherwise, you can get confused. Now, when we come back Friday, no reading assignment. When we come back Friday, we'll pick up and start talking individually about these kings. And we'll look briefly at each one of their reigns and what characterized them. Okay, we'll see you Friday. Might be a good idea to just study these lists a little bit and review these names and your reading assignment so you get these people straight. Thank you.